Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing the proposed mineral deal talk between the Trump administration of the United States and the Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm joined by a very special guest, Christian Gerald Nima Yamungu. Gerald is an analyst and an observer of China-Africa relations. He's currently the Africa editor at China Global South Project. He's also a non-resident scholar in the Africa program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington, D.C. He's also previously worked as a project manager for a Congolese mining company in the DRC, and also worked as a consultant on good governance and policy advocacy for the Center d'Etude pour Action Social. Gerald, we're very grateful to have you join us today, and I look forward to our conversation.
Happy to be your guest in this podcast.
Brilliant. So we've seen recently there's been talk of the negotiation between the Trump administration in the US and the Democratic Republic of Congo over access to critical mineral resources or mineral exports that the DRC has in abundance, including cobalt, copper, gold, diamonds. What is the push factor for this, or what is the scope of all of this? Can you explain to us what this talk is about? Is this speculation? Is this real?
So first of all, it's really too early to talk about ongoing negotiation. So far, what do we have? We did have a proposal that was put forward by the Congolese president, Félix Tshisekedi. It was done mid-March toward the Trump administration, where basically the DRC was proposing to give the U.S. access to its critical minerals in the eastern part, or maybe also in the other part of the country, in exchange to receive political and security support from the DRC, from the U.S. government. To put it in context, for those who have not been following, the DRC is facing a rebellion, the M23, that's backed by Rwanda. And the DRC is trying now to leverage its natural resources to try to convince a country like the US to put enough political pressure into Rwanda because of the mining, the minerals deal that the DRC is offering. Basically, it's mimicking what Ukraine and Americans are negotiating in the ideas like, we are giving you enough incentive to intervene for peace and stability in the DRC. In exchange, we are going to give you access to critical minerals. There's another thing that the DRC president is leveraging, is the fact that the Trump administration, just like the previous administration, was into countering China's influence in Africa and other parts in the global south. So by giving that access to critical minerals in the DRC, what the DRC president is saying is like, we are offering the opportunity to also counter China in the supply chain of those critical minerals by you being present here. So by doing that, it's hoping to incentivize enough the U.S. leadership to want peace and stability in the DRC. That's basically the background of what is of that deal, and that's basically what's happening. And we've seen there was a U.S. special envoy envoys that visited the DRC a few weeks back. He mentioned that. And of course, you have speculation saying that it was a negotiation ongoing, but so far there's no clear negotiation ongoing related to that deal. There's still discussion at this point, discussion before, maybe not negotiation, but this is basically what do we have happening right now on the ground.
Very interesting. You mentioned two interesting. So let me start off with one. So you mentioned, which is we can see clearly that this kind of like mirrors the Ukraine US deal. But the interesting thing there is, unlike the Ukraine US one, which has a lot of controversy, whereas it's the US government that is demanding access into this. We're seeing the opposite in the case of DRC. It looks like it's the DRC that is courting America. How can you define this or describe this differentiation between those two cases?
It's basically an approach that, based on the perception that we do have and reputation that the Trump administration has of being transactional, the DRC looking for partners, given how M23 is expanding, understood that based on how the US is reacting, there's no much of an incentive for the US to be actively involved in peace and stability in the DRC. So they had to offer themselves, which is basically, I think, a bit ridiculous, but they had to offer themselves to say, we can do that for you in exchange you providing our security and peace and stability. That's the idea. It's like, okay, we have before us a transactional administration, and maybe let's put transaction on the table. Maybe we're going to get something out of it. And DRC is not the only one who did that. We also had Somalia a few weeks after the DRC announcement. Somalia also proposing access to US to its port, to build military bases on the country, with the same idea, that the Trump administration will provide security to the country. And this is basically an idea based on the fact that they are not asking you, they are proposing to you. In a project kind of counterproductive, given that you may not have leverage, because we also know that there's the one who's asking that has less leverage. Now they're not even asking, you're offering yourself. By doing that, you're also losing your own leverage by hoping to negotiate anything substantial that really go beyond the simple interest of the regime, but the interest of the country. But right now, we have a regime that's much more focused into what can we do to guarantee our own safety, our own survival, more than what can we do to guarantee the long-term peace and stability of the country.
This seems to be very paradoxical, and maybe even anti the kind of like anti-African solution for African, and you know, the kind of narrative we've been seeing in the last couple of years, the kind of campaign where Africa seems, you know, you see with the president of Senegal, and you see there's this current, Africa is becoming important in geopolitical in this new scramble, if you can, or Africa is becoming very, very geopolitically important, and everybody's caught in Africa. So, but we'll kind of see a reversal with this. You know, you mentioned in Somalia, and you mentioned in this, that we see, rather than you see Africa is caught in these people and able to in this transaction, they are the one even fighting for this, and to maintain that extractive, that narrative, or that reality, Africa is an extractive continent rather than developing itself and being an equal partner. So would you say this is antithetical to the popular mobilization we've seen? Because we've seen, you know, it looks like there's a renewed or growing consciousness among the African populace. You've seen the Sahel, you know, we've seen in Mozambique, we've seen Kenya. Do you think there is a rupture? Do you think there is the African elites or those in power like Shikade and the Somalians are trying to, like you rightly mentioning, to just protect their regime rather than care for the people in these kind of proposals or deals that they're trying to strike?
I think it's a nuanced approach we should be having in this situation, because the idea here is it's saying that we want to be pragmatical into how we want to address our issue. There is a feeling, at least from the DRC government, that Africa hasn't done much into protecting DRC interests, even though personally I don't believe that DRC needs to be protecting, given the when we compare the country that are fighting. But that's beside the point. But the idea is like, yes, we haven't received much of support from African Union or from the EAC or from SADC, even though they send troops to help the DRC army. But they believe that we may be having more answer, favorable answer, looking to overseas outside the continent, where the real leverage exists, where there are more powerful countries that can exert the kind of leverage that the DRC needs to be exerted on Rwanda, so that Rwanda can stop its activism in the eastern part of the DRC. And that's the feeling that the Kinshasa has. Is it counterintuitive or antithetical to what we are seeing as a surge of either popular movement or either what people could perceive a new kind of nationalism being put on the table? Yes, it can be perceived as much, but also we're gonna have to look into it with much more nuance as well. Those surge of nationalism, the context upon which they're happening, because there are so many things also that need to be said about that. But yes, we have in a case here where we're in a situation where there is a need or demand for pragmatical solution rather than just quote-unquote ideological decision where we rely on African sovereignty, where Africa did not really help us very much. So this is the mindset that we do have in Kinshasa related to that mining deal that we are offering to the US.
There's more irony. So I remember we had I had a minister of DRC appear early on. I don't know what episode that was. You could check that. And she was the former national speaker of the house, and she appeared. And then she was talking about the competition between, and you will know this as the China experts, in DRC, China exerts dominance, hegemony. And I've been in conference recently, in the conference where, you know, the West actually wants to curtail or catch up with China's dominance when it comes to green energy or the minerals in DRC. They want to really catch up with that. And the minister did say, well, it's a question of diverse, going with whichever partner rather than going with a particular partner. So I'm beginning to see whether that is what is happening now, where DRC sees itself as opening the room for competition, and see how that is gonna benefit the country. But you mentioned about curtailing Tanzania and the. So I'm thinking, now that you're mentioning it, it might be a wise decision from DRC. DRC might be exerting some leverage rather than us seeing it as a weak. You know, you did mention that whoever is proposing has a weaker, but could it not be the other way? That, you know, they might be calculating that, you know, since Trump administration, America wants to curtail this, that could offer them a leverage in negotiating that deal. What do you think?
But there's not much of an urgency from the Trump administration to do so, in the sense where it's not as if, because of DRC's offering, that the Trump administration would feel that if we don't get it now, we are losing into something. And plus, let's not forget that when we talk about the U.S., what U.S. are we talking about? Are we talking about the private sector or the public sector? Because the private sector is the one deciding where to go to invest, and the public sector has no much leverage on the private sector or ability to compel them to go anywhere. So even if the DRC managed to sign anything with the Trump administration, the question will always remain, will the private sector see any economic validity to the offer that are made for them to be incentivized enough to come and invest in the DRC? And many of them have seen, and they're looking to the DRC from a perspective of a risky country, where this country is too much risk for us to invest in, so we don't feel the need to go there. And this perception of risk is also heightened by when you have cases like Glencore slapped with the $4.7 billion of tax to be paid. So if they're even considering leaving the country. So you have cases like this. At the end, beside the geopolitical element, the reality is the private sector will just have to decide for itself if they want to come to the DRC or not. So, yes, some would say that the DRC has leverage, but when you look onto the larger scale of things, you realize that there's not much of a leverage at the end because you are coming and you're offering yourself, and there's no sense of emergency for the US to do that. They've been trying to do that, that's undeniable, but they've been unsuccessful because so far the private companies are telling them, you know what, there's not much of an incentive for us to go to the DRC, risky country, risky place, no rule of law. So much issues in terms of corruption and transparency that we don't feeling like going there. And plus, let's not forget that in terms of within the supply chain of those minerals for which they're fighting, European and Western private companies are still doing business with Chinese companies. So no matter what's happened in the upstream on the upstream of the supply chain, it means mining and extraction. When you look into the midstreams, processing and refining, there's still a lot of cooperation and business happening between Chinese company and Western companies. So at the end, they're the one that are driving the market. And so far, those companies in the West haven't felt the need to go into the DRC, given the current circumstances of the country.
You mentioned something before. You mentioned the lack of trust or faith in the regional or African countries' ability or capacity or efforts to deal with the issues in the DRC. Can you expand on that? Because we've seen the South African troop, you know, in dealing with the recent M23 rebels in the African to East African Union. Can you expand on the ability or inability, if you put it, of regional governments such as IGAD or, you know, SODOC or, you know, this East African, and even African Union itself, to because we recently saw a negotiated settlement between, I think it was Qatar that was kind of like trying to negotiate, said that.
Yes.
What is going on with the regional or continental approach to dealing with these issues?
There was a feeling, there was that feeling from the DRC when they look into how the EAC army behaved within the DRC against the M23, they have the feeling that the EAC did not behave in a stronger way to force the M23 to withdraw from the DRC. There was that feeling that the EAC is much more, it's too much lenient toward Rwanda, understanding Rwanda's interest and not understanding the DRC interest. So that's why we see that shift happening between the EAC toward the SADC, where SADC had to send armies to made of DRC and made of South Africans in Malawi and to fight with the DRC. So when the city of Goma and Bukavu fell, there was also that sense of like, at the end, maybe those African countries are not much as determined to help us, even though there's a lot of support coming from those countries. So that's why at the end, the DRC had the feeling that, why are you spending a lot of money like this when we can actually deal with whatever and whoever is supporting Rwanda behind being Western countries, let's sign deals with them. And something that people need to understand is that the logic behind that offer is stemmed from the idea that the DRC instability is fueled by it's because of its natural resources. Rwanda is attacking DRC because of natural resources. But since Rwanda is selling those natural resources to other companies, being Western companies, the other companies, it means that we believe that those countries are the one financing instability in the eastern part of the DRC. And we believe that it's an active endeavor. So in that regard, we say, let's cut the middleman and let's go straight deal with, quote unquote, the one responsible, being the U.S., and say, we are making you a deal on the table, and we do hope that you're going to exert enough leverage to get your company being involved so they can stop funding Rwanda and Rwanda to attack us for our natural resources. This is the idea behind to what DRC has been trying to do now.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because I was in a... So the current foreign minister of DRC was visiting London, you know, in the wake of the M23 attack on that, and then was canvassing the international support or sanctions on Rwanda, which came eventually. But one of the questions I asked her in that meeting was the international, the role of the international government or the nation in escalating this issue. I'm glad you mentioned Rwanda. So you look at Rwanda, for instance. So you look at Rwanda has received a lot of support from the West. Is Rwanda, for Kagame, is an ally. You know, you've seen the deal with the United Kingdom for the migration stuff. You've seen Rwanda is involved in intervention in Mozambique and all of these places. So now, from your explanation, it does seem that whichever way you see it, I think it's whether cutting the middleman or going directly to the stuff is a loss to the general populace. Yeah. Whereas it could be, it seems like it's a loss to the general populace. And the question would then be, what is the, because the dynamics, I think we should start from talking about the dynamics of that regional, I think Burundi, I was looking at Burundi, Rwanda, and the kind of like border or some of the parts enters into the east and all of that kind of stuff, and how everyone is laying stake to that resources. Maybe you should just touch on that dynamics of that resource and how all of these regional countries lay some kind of stake on this. Maybe you should start from there.
Oh, the dynamics of this region is quite interesting, because we do have a lot of historical background that we're gonna have to dig into. We're gonna have to look into the 1994 genocide in Rwanda, 1994 genocide in Rwanda. What happened and what was its consequences in that region? We're also gonna have to look into the Hutu Tutsi dynamic in the region, in countries like Burundi, in countries like Rwanda. How did it happen? We're gonna have to look into so many factors that happen at the same time that may explain what do we see right now. And this, that at the end puts all the issue in a very global and very complex context, where the simple narrative of saying that the DRC is unstable because of natural resources is very much simplistic. It does not take into account other factors, various factors that come into mind, that come into fueling and feeding the conflict and the situation that we do see on the ground. And this is the part that I do believe that we need to pay extra careful attention to try to address the root cause of the issue being not being a single cause, but a mix of many causes that are taking place right now. So those dynamics are the one explaining what do we see, for instance, when you look into the relationship with the DRC and Burundi and Rwanda and DRC, Uganda and the DRC and Burundi. All of that are playing into the context we do have right now. And that's why, for example, given the rapprochement between DRC and Burundi, we see the involvement of the Burundian force, armed forces in the eastern part of the DRC beside the FRDC, the DRC official army. And we see Uganda playing a very mysterious and complex role in the northern, southern, in the east northern part of the country, northeastern part of the country, where their troops are present, but also they're expanding beyond the mandate that was agreed upon with the DRC government. So we see a lot of very various dynamic taking place that are just making things a bit complex to follow. And at the end, to be able to understand where peace and how peace can come from within the current circumstances. But the basic of it would be for peace to come, for the DRC to be respected in its borders and its sovereignty being upheld. And this is, I think, the basic prerequisite for this conversation to take place.
Yeah, I do agree with you. We've had other guests come that have shared similar sentiments about the complexity of the situation that is just beyond, you know, how people simplify it to just the minerals. But then again, we could see, if you see what's happened with the US finally coming to kind of like sanction, you know, Kagame, Rwanda, and then the UK also coming up with a stronger statement, you know, condemning them to the free attack. Do you think, in the light of this proposal, do you think that is that a signal that the US and the West might be shifting
towards the priority?
Yeah, those are the priorities.
I think it's too early to say for now. It's very much too early to say, given that beyond those sanctions, nothing concrete has been taken, has been done, and we can see that on the ground how the M23 keeps on moving forward. It just tells you that those sanctions did not really work. They may have an impact for quite some time, but did not really work in a way to hamper or to hinder Rwanda's ability to intervene militarily in the eastern part of the DRC. So I don't see as a shift happening. I see much more an understanding of that the DRC has been in an unjust position for quite some time. That issue needs to be addressed. But at the same time, there's not much of an incentive to push for Rwanda not to get involved and stop Rwanda to get involved in DRC internal matters, because we also have our internal matters that may explain the crisis that we do have right now.
Let's assume this deal, you know, it's beyond speculation and it does happen. What do you think, how's that going to look like? And what can it upend? Can it change relations? Will it escalate or de-escalate the situation, you know, with competition, especially with China's domination in DRC when it comes to mineral?
It's really going to depend on the way the deal is stricken. It's going to depend on what and how it has been, what has been promised by the DRC, in which conditions. The DRC is going to take away Chinese mining concession to give them to Americans. That's going to be problematic. Or what they're going to do. It's really going to depend on the context and on the how this mining deal will be signed and what will be the provision of the mining deal itself. But so far, we haven't seen much. As I said earlier, it's a very, very early stage for us to talk about negotiation, let alone to assume and presume what would be the content of that deal. But so far, we know the premises, we know the mindset behind the deal, and we can allude and see what we can expect from that deal.
Yeah. I don't even see any, like, there should be a bit of caution to, in this, looking at the current Ukraine and the US and how the Trump administration is not so explicit in guaranteeing security or the failure. Do you think if that does go on, is that not like, shouldn't that be a cautionary tale to DRC to say, we're not guaranteed of receiving this kind of security we want. We might just end up just losing, giving these concessions without getting the kind of security guarantees that we want. Shouldn't that be a caution to them?
That could be a caution only if, as I say, the deal is stricken in a way that it addressed the issue that the Congress president is raising or the DRC is raising. But so far, as I say, we're gonna have to look clearly and into much more details on how the DRC intends to use what so far is its kind of leverage to get to that point there exactly. And so far, it's really easy. I cannot read into a crystal ball to tell you where is it going and if it's going to be a cautionary tale, because I don't see the US intervening in any way militarily in the DRC. We don't see that happening. What we see, what we can hope, is to see the US exert its influence within the IMF, the World Bank, to make sure, exactly sure, that, you know, financing coming from the DRC, coming from the world, to go to Rwanda. And let's not forget, Rwanda depends a lot more from international donors. So if we're able to exert pressure where it's hurt the most, it means where the money is, maybe Rwanda will have less intensive and clearly less means to be able to feed its army and to have its army intervening in the eastern part of the DRC.
Let me talk a bit about China, which is where your expertise is. What is the scope? Because we keep talking about DRC. You know, I've seen, we've done another episode on Chinese mining in Nigeria. We've seen China, you know, certainly. What is the scope of China's grip or hold on Africa's mineral resources, or, you know, what is the scope of Africa's hold on in that region?
The scope of Africa hold on to the critical minerals in Africa, or the whole?
No, China. China, yeah. China?
No, China is quite present in many producing countries in Africa, those who are producing natural critical minerals. The most notable one being the DRC. And then you have Zambia with Zimbabwe with lithium. You have Guinea with bauxite. And in the middle, you have like countries like Ghana with bauxite. You have Nigeria with lithium, where they buy lithium from and different dealers. You have presence in Zambia, of course, with copper. You have a certain presence in Mozambique as well. So it's really where China has been dominant, being present in those supply chain. But let's not forget that China's dominance is only. It's on the supply chain globally. It's more on the mid and downstream. It means that refining and processing that's happening for within those supply chain minerals. It's not really much more on the upstream where there is extraction. The only place where China is really dominant when it comes to extraction would be the country like the DRC or country like Guinea as well. But remaining, it's much more like, you know, to a certain country, this kind of a balance. Yes, in Zimbabwe, you can also talk about Zimbabwe because of the sanction and the embargo that alienated all Western partners and created space for China to be present. You also have that case in Zimbabwe as well. But China is overly, I'd say, present, but largely dominant. I'd take it with nuances depending on the country that you are covering and looking into.
Okay, let's start rounding off now. What is, well, a lot of people talk about the natural resource cost and you know, all of these kind of like conversations that we're seeing. How do you see this moving forward in the light of the obvious China, America, geopolitical competition and all of that stuff? How do you see Africa and all these African countries, how do you see it moving forward? Are we going to be seeing some kind of like Cold War politics or Cold War kind of events?
Dynamics.
We
maybe expect things like that, especially for those countries who are actively seeking a US support. But we've seen also most every African country repeating and saying that we do not want to pick side in this US-China geopolitical tension. We don't want to pick side. We want to be able to work with China and other partners if we want to. We don't want to do that. But the question is, when you look at the Trump administration is behaving, like how long country in the global south will be strong enough to stay their position of call for neutrality, given that the US can still use certain leverage to force certain countries to adopt a certain position. But the way I foresee things to go, I foresee African countries in the most majority remaining neutral to that geopolitical war and trying to engage as much as possible to all stakeholders and to get the advantage and the benefits of engaging with them at the same time.
Interesting. But again, there's something that really, really amazes me again, that might support what you're talking about, besides the fact that there's little appetite for US or American or Trump in Africa. You know, it's again, Trump in his first administration didn't have any positive view of climate change. He didn't believe climate change, and they withdrew from the
They still don't believe in it.
So then you're looking again, there's a paradox of this drive and competition for the green economy and all of these paradoxes. How do you reconcile all of these ironies and paradoxes?
The reality is that the US is not interested to those critical minerals because of the green energy property. No, they're interested in those minerals because of the other use being for defense industry, for weaponry, for technology. They're more interested by those use and application of those minerals more than the greenery in terms of like what they can produce in terms of climate change and solar panels and everything. They're not into that. That's the way we see a two different dynamic playing into in that debate. And that dynamic even shows into the naming of those minerals. That's why you're going to hear about critical minerals, transition minerals, green minerals, because the idea behind the naming reflects also what we perceive as to be much more important to what angle we are looking into. For the Trump administration, it's much more about security more than anything than that is energy transition or anything else. And this is why you see, despite the Trump administration not believing into climate change or withdrawing from the Paris Agreement or not putting money into green energy or fueling or green lighting new LNG project and oil project in the US, they're still very much following critical minerals, not because it's producing green energy, but because it can be used in defense industry. And that's what they're doing. And that's why they're trying to fight China's presence in the controlled order of supply chain, even though they believe they're really much late into that game. But that's what they're trying to do.
Let's come to the last question. And it's going to be different for you. What do you see? How do you project this going forward? What do you think is going to happen? Do you think this deal is going to materialize? I see you shaking your head. If it doesn't, what do you think is the way out? I think, what is the way out for Africa? How should Africa, in all of these two elephants that are fighting, how should Africa position itself?
So for the deal for the DRC, do I see that to materialize? I have my own doubts. I'm quite skeptical because looking into the different factors that will determine whether or not a company will be interested into investing in the DRC, there's not much interest for companies to do that. So I do not believe and I do not bet for that deal to materialize, at least not under the current circumstances. And we've seen that when reading different reports where companies are saying the country is not safe. And that is where you see the irony of it, because the DRC is proposing the deal, so the US is going to say yes, and the US is going to will bring peace and stability, so companies will come. Companies are saying, yes, it seems interesting, but we need peace and stability and security first before coming. And then it becomes a chicken egg situation where then you kind of wonder what's going to come first and what needs to give in before that deal to take shape. So I don't believe that deal will take shape anytime soon. And if it does, I don't believe it to be in the benefit for the DRC, because as I mentioned earlier, we lost our leverage by coming and going, we're going to show you, we want to give you this and in exchange give us peace and stability. They can still price it up in exchange to what you're providing. And this, I don't see that deal happening. So in terms of where do I see the future going for Africa? I don't know if we have to be precise in terms of what peace, stability, geopolitical competitions, or what. Because if it's about geopolitical competition, as I said, I do believe that African countries will try to remain as neutral as they can to avoid any kind of backlash. Because the reality is, when you look into the geopolitical landscape in the world right now, it's very difficult to pick side. It's very difficult. Some would even say it's not even recommended, or it's not even wise for you to pick side under the current circumstances, because things are much more complex and difficult right now. So countries are going to try to keep their cards close to their chest and say, I'm going to pick and choose which partner to engage in under which circumstances, under which context I want to engage in. So that's the future I see, even though I see that certain countries will be put under much more pressure than other countries. And I don't see small countries to be part of that geopolitical tensions. I see big countries being either geographically well placed or having a lot of natural resources, being caught in that debate where those powerful countries, much more Western countries, will be asking, either you are with us, either you're against us. And that's going to be quite difficult, given that many of those regimes' survival depends on whether or not those Western countries are green lighting their presence or not.
I agree with you. I do share your view. But anyways, Gerard, this has been an interesting topic and conversation. I enjoyed this conversation. We can only, like you rightly said, we live in a time where is very, very difficult to predict. And someone even said it's not even multiple polar world. It's the world where there's no even a polarity. You don't even know.
The world has changed. The world has evolved in so many ways that I don't know. I'm seeing the future where we see a different international system where we see subgrouping becoming more relevant than large grouping. I see places where if countries are bold enough to take their ambition high and to get their governance right and to make their country relevant, some countries are going to win into that game, but some will keep on losing because if they do not take the proper action and measure to exist under the current circumstances, it will be bad. That's why I see people should not be worried about Donald Trump, because Trump is a four-year person. After that, something else, another president will come. What he's doing now may have an impact on the longer run. And the question is, are we ready? Are we taking every step that we can to remain relevant and to exist given the future, how the future will look like? What role do we want to play? How do we want to play? Question like for the DRC, the DRC of Africa, the Nigeria, the South Africa, the Ghana, the Egypt, the Morocco, the Angola, to say, where do we see ourselves in the next 15, 20 years, given the international system is likely to change? Where do we want to stand? What do we do now? What do we have to do now to be able to remain relevant during those times? And I think that is the question that African elites should be starting to answer the question right now, and not wait for that change to happen, then to realize that they were late into the debate.
I agree with you. There are going to be losers and there are going to be winners, definitely. And that's how it was. But anyways, thank you very much, Christian Gerard. I really appreciate your time.
It's a real pleasure to be part of this and trying to give voice to African stakeholders in those debates. To put African voices out, I think it's always useful.
Exactly.
It really helps.
Very important. Very important. Very important. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much.
You too.
Bye-bye. Yeah,
bye. Thank you once more for joining me this week. And as usual, let's warmly thank our guest, Christian Gerard, for his, I would say, very incisive and insightful commentary on the proposed mineral deal talk between the administration of Donald Trump in the United States and President Félix Tshisekedi in DRC. For now, stay blessed, and I'll see you next week.